shares,
market,
the S&P, the ASX
stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that's old enough to remember when department stores were profitable. I'm Andrew Page, and with me, as always, is Mr. Scott Phillips.
G'day, Andrew. G'day, Phil. Good to be with you.
Today on the podcast, Bellamy's is back on the ASX with a thud. And speaking of thud, that sound you can hear is Myer's share price falling. We're going to dive into that. Oh, man. And the Aussie dollar cracks 80 cents for the first time in 2 years, and the RBA flags rate increases. What's that all mean? And it's Scott's turn to get on his high horse. We're talking great expectations and not of the Dickens kind. Looking forward to that one, mate. But first, Bellamy's.
Yes.
So Bellamy's, these are the infant formula producers.
Talk about roosted a feather duster.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Oh,
this was
mate.
Just everyone and... Everyone and anyone was talking about Bellamy's a while. He was just making billionaires out of shareholders, just to exaggerate slightly.
I've told you a million times not to exaggerate, mate.
Exactly. And then they got into all of this this trouble with their supply. They were in suspension for what seemed like an ages at the time. What was it, 10 days or so?
Mate, it was even longer. I want to say it might have been three or four weeks,
that's
I think,
a long
over
time.
Christmas and January this year.
Okay, and they came back onto the market and then thud. They raised some money. Shares have sort of been creeping back up again. And then, out of the blue, they go into suspension again. Chinese regulator suspending the export license of their Melbourne canning facility that they had only just purchased. So shares, bang, all the way down again. Mate, tell me, what do shareholders do with Bellamy's?
Well, I want to take half a step back just for a second to talk a little bit more about this story. This was the stock in 2015 and 16. This was the stock. Mm. As you said, infant formula was white gold. You couldn't get enough of the stuff.
Yep.
Investors couldn't get enough of the stuff. Exporters couldn't get enough of the stuff. Mm. This is a $1.40 share price at the end of 2014. That's less than 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? August 2014. It got to a high of $14.52.
Massive.
That's a 10 bagger,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And now it's sitting at $6.40.
That's amazing.
And so this is, look, it's still
roller coaster, right?
It's still up probably four times on the original IPO price.
Yep.
So if you've got some shares, then you're still doing okay.
And you held strong.
And there's probably a lesson
steel.
There too,
yep.
right, about the value of long-term shareholding.
Totally.
But geez, it's been a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And frankly, in between that $14 and $6 share price, it feels as low as $4. So
yeah.
it's up even 50% since those lows.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know if there'll ever be a book written about this. I'm not sure it's interesting enough to read a book about, but geez, the story is just fantastic.
There is a lot of lessons in there.
So there was, there's the old story about 1% of China. You know, if I could get just 1% of China, I'd be rich.
Yep.
And so when Bellamy's goes to China, both directly and through these Daigou exporters, it was the best thing since sliced bread. And people were thinking
about... Well, they weren't even just saying if we get one. I mean, they were getting some real traction. I mean,
stuff
was flying off the shelf. They were actually selling it. Profit and sales, growing.
And so people think, well, what if maybe this could be huge?
Mm.
And so all of a sudden, everybody piled into this stock, right?
Yep.
And it was supposed to be the best thing ever. The problem was that there wasn't any real certainty about the level and sustainability of that demand in China. So yes, things were flying off the shelves, but to use an old phrase, was it Coke or was it a fidget spinner?
Mm.
And that's the key thing, right? For those listening who don't know what fidget spinners are, congratulations.
You've avoided
that craze. if you've got small kids or even school-age kids anywhere near you, you've seen those little three-sided little spinny things that they're all playing with these days.
That's a topic for another day, mate.
It is
an economics lesson in there.
Well, yeah. And so for those a little bit past the fidget spinner stage, think of the yo-yo, right? The fad and the boom and bust of the yo-yo. Bellamy's was the biggest thing ever until it wasn't.
Mm.
And this is the real lesson for shareholders. Now, the company was suspended over the new year, basically because they didn't know what the hell was going on. They bought a whole lot of stock. They couldn't sell it. They had to pay some bills.
Mm.
They didn't have the cash to pay the bills. The suppliers had them by the, you know what's. And that was the real challenge, is what do you do next as a business? They had to basically sell their souls to the suppliers to get out of that trading suspension, to avoid effectively being taken to the wall. If the suppliers had said, no, screw you, pay us the money, they literally wouldn't have had the cash to do it. It would have been the end of Bellamy's.
Yeah.
Now, they managed to negotiate some very favorable deals for their suppliers.
Mm.
Bellamy stayed alive. China said, well, you can only export stuff to us if you own your own canning facility.
Mm.
Bellamy's back in the day, again, part of this story. They were supposed to be this wonderful business, great brand, no manufacturing facilities.
So super capital light.
Capital light, right. Yep. Capital light means no money required to run the business.
Well, not
someone
much.
Else, yep. Someone else does the, milks the cows. Someone else dehydrates the milk. Mm. Someone else cans it for you.
Yep. You basically control the brand. Yep.
And it's a great model when it works.
When it
the
works,
problem is they didn't control any of that supply chain. China said, hey, guys, how about you don't import anything into China until you've got that. Bellamy said, great, we'll do that.
Mm.
And then about, what, maybe only a month? Mm. Maybe a month and a half after they announced they bought this Camperdown canning facility, the Chinese government said, well, we've had some complaints about it and we're shutting you down.
Yeah.
And so this is there is so much here. There's customer concentration. There's regulatory risk. There is, you know,
dangers of extrapolation.
We like capital light businesses. They're great businesses in theory because you get a really, really high return on equity, which is fantastic. But it means you don't have anything really solid to support the business itself. And so when these things happen, you have nothing to fall back on. You can't fall back on your manufacturing facilities. You can't fall back on anything. You are at the absolute mercy of people who would otherwise do you harm. Now, what happens from now? It's $6.40 as a share price, as I said, fourfold higher than listing.
Yep.
Less than half of what it was at its peak. It's an open question, and we don't yet know. The real question for Bellamy's is very simply, how big is the ongoing Chinese demand? And if the answer is it bounces back to previous levels, then the shares are cheap at this point.
Oh, cheap as chips.
If it becomes a story of, well, Bellamy's was a flash in the pan and never, like the fidget spinner, like the yo-yo, to be repeated again, then just maybe it's still expensive. And I think that's the real question for current shareholders and prospective shareholders. If you're looking at Bellamy's, the hope has to be that it recovers. If it doesn't recover, then you're in trouble.
Yeah. And let's not forget, it's trading on 24 odd times their existing earnings. So despite the fall and the pullback that it's had, there's a lot of growth baked into that. So
that's a lot of expectations.
You need to be careful with that one.
Motley Fool Money. Financial advice for real people, not trust fund hippies. Sign up for the newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM.
Speaking of stocks you need to be careful of, this is a much older business. Myers has been around forever and a day, one of the big department store chains here in Oz.
Yep.
And they had their worst day ever in terms of percentage terms with the shares down 10%. So the group downgrading its forecast, talking about continued weakness in retail trading conditions, some big one-off write-downs. And a surprise departure of one of the senior management team as well. So the market did not like this, and I guess you and I are a bit of a sucker for falling share price. That sometimes can mean a bargain. Other times it can mean a value trap, and it could just mean throwing good money after bad. So I guess when something like this happens, the question is this an opportunity to be taken advantage of, or is there more pain to come?
I wouldn't buy this one with your money. What do you reckon?
Yeah. Look, I think this with retailers, you've always got to go into it knowing that it's going to be a cyclical kind of ride. It's the nature of the beast. It's just not a smooth operation. It's a very, very tough business. But there's something far more structural going on with Myers here. And I would posit that their entire business model is under threat. Back in the day, you'd go to a department store and they'd have all these various divisions and you'd go there and you'd get everything that you needed to get. It was a wonderful model. But that's kind of been replaced by Westfield and what they've done now. The shopping mall has become the department store. It's a much more specialized business, I suppose, and it's one that's had incredible success. It's just losing relevance.
Yeah.
And combined with that, now you've got this online threat, you know, dare I mention Amazon for the 100th time this month. You know, it's all of this kind of stuff going at it. So this is more than just some short-term hiccups to my mind. This, we've talked extensively on this podcast about things like the newspapers, the network, the TV networks, you know, things that are just really, there's a new normal at play, and we can't look to the past, their past performance, as any reliable guide as to what's going on in the future. So shares, what are they now, mate? You mentioned it before. It's in the
74 cents they closed. We're recording this on Friday morning. On Thursday afternoon, they closed at 74 cents.
What did they list at?
Well, the first day of trading, they closed at $4.11.
Oh, so it's come back a long way.
And that was the highest ever share price for Myer. There is no Myer shareholder at the IPO who has ever possibly made money from this thing. It has been a train wreck of a story, down more than 80% since their listing.
Yeah, and you sort of look at it now, and I was talking about price earnings multiples before with Myer's now below 10, I believe. So again, that value investor, that contrarian within, sort of, oh, there's a bargain. The market. You know, I remember you and I have had a dalliance with Metcash in the past,
indeed,
which we've talked about before. Same kind of issue, you know, where you kind of think, yeah, I know, it's got problems, but it's really cheap and it's in the price and, you know, people are just overly pessimistic. But I think what you and I are both saying in this case is that this is probably going to go down. For them to get back to where they were, they're going to have to pull more than one rabbit out of the hat, and it's just low probability stuff.
For them to go back to where they were, the internet is going to have to stop working permanently.
Okay.
To quote Meatloaf, mate, you took the words right out of my mouth. This is This is an awfully structurally challenged business. Mm. There is, you're right, Westfield is the department store of today. Mm. Amazon, quite frankly, is the department store of tomorrow. Mm. Meijer is the department store of yesterday. It's as simple as that. I do expect that if Meijer and DJs are able somehow to rationalize, so there's one of them left,
yep.
whether one buys the other, whether one goes broke, I wouldn't be at all surprised if there's room for one department store chain with probably about half as many stores as they have now.
Half the floor space as well.
Yeah, in some of the bigger shopping centers. So you think about, they stock a lot of brands that don't justify their own store footprint.
Yeah.
There will always be physical retail of one sort or another, I think.
Sure, I agree.
But if you think about fashion in particular, makeup, perfumes, that kind of stuff, department stores are perfect if you can't. Yeah. So let's look at Oriton Group, for example. Mm-hmm. Oriton has its own stores. Mm. Coach has its own stores. Mm-hmm. Plenty of other, Sports Girl, Super A, pick a fashion brand. Mm. I don't know many of them. That's as many as I can name. But the ones that are smaller than that, right? Mm. The ones that can't justify their own store network have to go somewhere.
Yep.
And the department store is perfect for those guys.
Yep.
The problem is that, as you say, half the stores, half the floor space, there is a role for a department store, which is a collection of subscale brands and in-demand subscale brands. I think there is a role for that. There isn't a role for as many department store, literal stores as there are, and probably not one for two chains.
So I'm going to make you the CEO of Meijer's.
hate me that much. Is this payback for buying Meijer with your money?
Talk about a poison chalice.
Oh, and mate, is that.
So that's what you do. You just say, listen, we're not going to bother expanding at all unless we have very good reason. We're going to reduce our floor space.
Yep.
We're going to open up the remaining floor space to those subscale retailers.
Yep.
We're just going to really
scope our brands in particular.
We're really just sort of subleasing our space to other retailers and clipping the ticket along
the
way.
Which is kind of that's exactly what a department store is if you think about it. Think about you walk around a department store, so the Ben Sherman section over here, the Winsor Smith section over there, the Sass & Bide section over there. Mm-hmm. You know, it is exactly a couple of racks of a particular brand. That's what they're effectively subleasing it now. That's what retail kind of is, right? You take the wholesale goods, you sell them at retail.
Yeah.
It's not exactly calling us subleasing the brand, but that's effectively what you're doing. So, exactly that. I think if you have those brands, there are a number of strong enough brands that can survive on their own bat.
Yep.
Electronics is not going to work for them. Book retailing is out.
Oh,
electronics retailing is probably out.
Yeah. Even the cosmetics, DVDs, I think, CDs. To some extent. Like the price lines in the Chemist Warehouse of this world, I'm sure they've taken a very big chunk from Meijer's and DJs.
Yeah. There is simply not enough business left for these guys in their current state. If you make me CEO of Meijer, Mate and DJ still exists, I have no confidence I can fix the business.
Yeah.
If you said to me, look, I'll make you a CEO of the combined business and I can close some stores, I would probably close somewhere around two-thirds, three-quarters of the stores.
See, there's the other thing. There's the surviving and there's actually growing at a rate that's going to justify any investment in this thing.
And particularly from this point. I think there is a viable department store business at some point of a certain size. Mm. Do I feel comfortable buying shares at 74 cents and expecting to make money? No, absolutely not.
Picking up pennies in front of a steamroller.
Indeed. Good way to put it.
Get more Motley Fool money advice at fool.com.au/MMM.
Let's move on. Speaking of pennies.
and steamrollers.
And steamrollers. I know you're a big FX trader. Oh. You love to trade your currencies.
Foreign exchange, my middle name.
I think you couldn't think of anyone less likely to do that than yourself. let's talk a bit about currency though, because it all affects us in one way or the other.
Good point.
And the Aussie dollar is up. In fact, it's back above 80 cents the first time in 2 years.
That is crazy, isn't it?
Is it amazing? You know what? There's a lot of lessons here. I remember very distinctly a year ago when the Aussie dollar was probably around 73-ish cents, somewhere around that level. And all of the experts were talking, and frankly, I thought the same myself. I thought it's headed lower. If anything, people were expecting it to be in the 60s at that stage. And what a turnaround it's been. So obviously, it's good for importers, bad for exporters. The RBA would probably posit net negative for the country as a whole.
Yeah,
makes us less internationally competitive, all things being equal.
At least for exporters.
So there's a lot to go with here. So the first thing is, I suppose, it was probably the RBA that spurred that increase. Tell us a bit about that.
Look, it was to some degree. I think if you look at let's go back 5 years. 5 years ago, the dollar was at $1.05 US.
I remember it got to $1.10. Right, $1.10,
It was. And then only maybe 12 months ago, maybe something like that, it was down as low as 68 cents.
Mm.
And now it's cracking 80 again. You kind of think, how is it possible that much has changed in the world economy to see such dramatic shifts? I mean, 5 years ago it was 2012, right? It wasn't like 2008-09 in the middle of the GFC. This was well and truly at the back end of the GFC.
Yeah.
China was riding high. People were using Australia as a commodity currency. That's what we were kind of supposedly about. The real challenge has been, and whenever we talk about currencies, it really is, you've got to look at both sides of the same coin, right? It's the Australian dollar, yes, but it's versus the US dollar or versus the pound or the yen or something else. Mm-hmm. I would say the Deutschmark once upon a time, but that's mm-hmm. how old I am. I remember the Deutschmark and the franc and the lira.
Gold doubloons as well. Or is that going back too far?
Very nice. You're older than me. Just because you've got more hair, dude. Don't start throwing barbs around. The story of currencies is about the two different economies. And the expectation was always, frankly, that a resurgent US with higher US interest rates would see that number redressed. Now, there is no magic formula for currencies. People will try and tell you there is. That's your first lesson. You should run away. God, yeah. But think about it. There's a couple of things that are going on. The first is the relative interest rate. Mm-hmm. The second is the relative economic growth level. Mm-hmm. Those two predominantly should tell you roughly what the directional change of exchange rate should be. And it makes sense, right? Yep. If you can make more money having your money in Australian dollars by investing in Australian, put money in Australian banks, for example, you might be able to get 2% in a fixed term deposit. Mm. In the US, you're getting effectively zero. Mm.
So there's some reason. The so-called carry trade.
Right. So if you're American, you're going to buy Australian dollars to invest in Australian term deposits and get a higher rate than you get at home. Mm. Buying Australian dollars pushes the price up. Conversely, if you're going to take your money back, you're selling Australian dollars, buying US dollars, that pushes the US dollar up and the Australian dollar down. Now, that's the basic idea of it, right? Over time, as US rates were supposed to go up and Australian rates were supposed to stay roughly even, we should have seen that balance redressed. And as the gap closed between Australian rates and US rates, more money was supposed to go home to the US away from Australia. That had pushed the Aussie dollar down, the US dollar up. That was the story. And as you said, 18 months ago, that was exactly what was expected.
Yeah.
Now, in the meantime, Janet Yellen and the US Fed just can't, for whatever reason, see their way through to increasing rates in the US as much as I think most people expect it, and frankly, as much as I think they should. And what that's done is basically people are going, well, okay, if the US rates aren't going up, then I guess I'm going to jump into Australian dollars. As you said, only recently the RBA came out and said, we think neutral rates are a bit higher than here. In fact, about 3.5%.
That's 0.25% rises from where we are now.
And so that's 2 percentage points for the people playing at home. That's the easy way you can say it.
Yes, I sound smarter if I say it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's 16
that's true.
Eighths. Anyway, so yeah, look, and that's the story, right? So all of a sudden you've got a story where the US Fed's saying, well, rates have to go up at some point, but not yet, and we don't know when. And Yellen, frankly, has got a track record of ducking the hard decisions, frankly. Conversely, the RBA is saying, guys, the next move's up and we're going up from here. Malcolm Turnbull came out and said, I accept the next move is going to be up. Effectively, the RBA and the Prime Minister have put the bottom in for the dollar, for the interest rates. And so right now, people are saying, well, geez, if that's the case, it's actually more likely maybe that the current difference between the two countries' exchange rates or interest rates, I should say, stays roughly level or maybe even gets bigger if we go up before the US does or at a faster rate.
So what's the takeaway from all of this then? Is it just one of the... I mean, I tend to take a fairly sanguine view on all of this kind of stuff, you know, trying to focus on the things I can control and making peace with those I can't. The Aussie dollar's always been in that kind of camp for me. I don't ever want to have an investment where, you know, I'm going to be blown out of the water if the dollar happens to go from 80 to 85 or something like that. Yeah. What's your advice? I mean, where's the practical takeaway from all of this?
You have just, I think, done exactly that, Andrew, already. I think this is, currency traders are either really brave or really mad, and probably both. It's a zero-sum game. Trying to speculate in currency, frankly, the last 12 months have shown us exactly the folly of doing that. People were saying the dollar was going to be 60-something, 80-something.
And for good reason, good rationale, smart people.
That's the problem, right? Yep. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. I think the road to financial hell is paved with good, well-intentioned, good quality forecasts that happen to be dead wrong. Yeah. And that's the real challenge. When it comes to companies you invest in, I think it does, you have to remember that companies with overseas operations, whether they be costs or revenues or both,
they're going to be hurt.
They are impacted or helped, by the way, depending on which way the money goes, which way what the reported currencies are. So for example, a company like Cochlear reports in US dollars, so does ResMed. So, you know, there are reasons to take that into account. But frankly, we've always said, even directly investing in the US, invest in quality businesses, an exchange rate movement, if it goes in your favor, is the cherry on top. And if it goes against you, as long as you're a long-term investor, you don't need to worry about
it. Yeah, it'll move around, but it's not going to be the primary driver of returns.
Exactly.
Real money advice from real people. Not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
Oh, Jesus. Sorry, I had to do the sound effect. It's time for Scott to get onto his high horse and tell us everything, what's wrong with the world and how he would fix it. Mate,
is this our two-hour episode? Here's what's wrong with the world.
Make yourself
get
comfortable.
Get off my lawn.
Tell us what's eating away at you this week.
Liam's already turned down the volume just quietly. So as I start to yell, he's just slowly winding me down. I'm currently yelling at the top of my voice right now, but Liam's just managing it nicely for us.
Nice work, Liam.
Mate, you know what? So we're coming up to earnings season.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that companies are going to tell us how much profit they made. And then most of the financial world will compare that to previous management guidance.
Or analyst guidance even. Doesn't even have to come from the company.
And then they're going to try and decide whether that's a good or a bad result. And mm-hmm. that drives me completely stone
motherless. That makes perfect sense. You know, again, you've got to be careful of this word. You're a fundamentalist. You know, you're looking at the business.
Investor. Can I say that?
Yeah, it's probably a better way of
Thank
saying.
You.
You know, you're trying to understand what this business's earnings capacity is and make a value judgment around about that. Surely it matters how they're, you know, what they're earning and how that compares with prior expectations.
Mate, I know you don't believe in what you're asking me. And the reason you gave yourself up because you said you're looking at the building company's earnings capacity. And that's exactly the story. There's General Electric, the big US conglomerate, industrial conglomerate in the US. It beat expectations by exactly 1 cent
mm-hmm.
every quarter for about 10 years straight.
Wow.
Is that impressive?
Very impressive.
You'd almost think it was managed deliberately to
massaged a little bit.
Oh, mate, look.
And that's not to say cooking the books, by the way. That's just, you know, operationally trying to do things to deliver on expectations.
It's frying them nicely on both sides, if not cooking them.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing fraudulent there, but you can, any company CEO can manage expectations, right? Can manage the results to expectations.
Yeah.
If you tell me I've got to deliver $1 a share in earnings next year, I can do that for you tomorrow.
Mm.
No matter what damage it does to the long-term business, no matter how much attention and time it takes away from actually running the business, CEOs and CFOs who sit in the room and go, Jesus, how do we deliver on management expectations? How do we make sure we told the market $1?
Mm.
We're at 98 cents now. What can we do? We'll cut some marketing. Isn't that going to harm the business? Yeah, don't worry about that. Or let's cut some R&D. But we're working on some stuff for next year. Don't worry about that.
Mm.
All I've got to do is get
some of
that
business we were hoping to book next quarter. Oh, let's try and bring that forward to this quarter.
Yeah. Give them a discount. Get the sale.
Yeah.
There is nothing more stupid than that approach. Yeah. And frankly, not only does it do that, but on the flip side of that, it completely detracts from what we're trying to do. We want management teams to build the long-term value of the companies mm-hmm. that we invest in. Mm-hmm. And so every time they don't do that, they focus on the short term rather than the long term, they are costing you and I money over that period of time.
Yeah.
On the flip side, you made the point about analysts, Andrew, and when people are watching this stuff and responding accordingly, not only is it manager doing the wrong thing, but knuckleheads who look at the quarterly numbers or the half yearly numbers and go, they missed earnings by a cent. Mm. That's terrible. This is a terrible business. They're obviously not going to grow, da 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 da. I'm going to lambast the entire industry now. You ready?
Okay. I hope you never want to get a job anywhere else.
This is me putting myself out of a job anywhere.
I do not support or endorse the comments of Mr. Scott Phillips.
Oh, he does. You know he does.
Go for it.
Most financial analysts, and frankly, a decent number of investors, have never worked in a commercial business in their lives.
Mm.
And so when they look at a set of numbers and go, well, it's not just a smooth upward trend to the right.
Mm.
Therefore, it's a bad business. It's
Something's like, wrong. And something might be wrong, to be fair. But
yeah, look, it's possible.
But you can find yourself jumping at shadows, can't you?
I've worked in a million different... Well, not a million. I've worked in quite a number of different businesses in previous past lives before I joined this investment gig. And I'll tell you what, this stuff happens, right? Like suppliers can't supply. Customers go away. Customers come back.
Mm.
Sales grow in a quarter because you have a great promotional. You have a great new product.
Mm.
These things happen. They are bulky. They are lumpy.
There's not always a conspiracy behind things. Yeah.
It's not a conspiracy. The conspiracy comes in when people try and then massage the results.
Yeah.
And this is where it gets stupid, right? So,
I'll often hear people commentate saying, this management can't be trusted. In January, they told us to expect this. Now they said, what are they? They're leading us up the garden path. You know, they're trying to manipulate the market and all of these kinds of things. That's what I mean by conspiracy. I think what it really comes down to is management teams getting together after the half year saying, well, look, we're on track to this. This is our budget. This is our best guess. The market wants to know what we're thinking. This is what we think. It's just a question of it being very difficult to predict, even when you're inside the business and you know more about it than most.
It is blatantly bloody stupid for any management team, unless they have contracted revenues out 12 months, to make a forecast. All they're doing is, as you say, finger in the air. Well, we're growing about this rate. We're booking about this much a week in revenues.
Yeah.
Let's assume it continues.
Yeah.
And it is just, there is no rational reason for any management team to expect they know the answer to that.
Yep.
The old line is, you know, why do experts don't forecast because they know?
Mm.
They do it because they're asked.
Yeah.
And so that's the stupidity of this process. If you're, do yourself a favor. CEOs, I know all of our ASX 200 CEOs listen to this, Andrew. Mm. It's their required listening over a weekend. So while you're out walking the dog or, you know, driving the Ferrari, whatever you're doing, Please, for the love of God, stop giving forecasts. Stop giving guidance. Stop holding yourselves up to an expectation. You can't deliver. We know it. You know it. It's just this bloody charade that the market continues with because it wants to know an answer, because the brokers want to look smart. It is absolutely madness.
We talked about it last week and telling everything that was wrong with Buffett, but I'm going to quote Buffett now. And he says something about when companies report, he's really looking for two things. He's, you know, did earnings improve with due regard, I think is the statement, to industry conditions. So, you know, did they meet guidance? Was it 0.4% either side of it? But, you know, did we see an overall improvement in the quality of that business? And did its competitive position improve? And you're really looking at those two kinds of dynamics. And if you get a business that, let's say, it's grown its profit at 4.9% this year, maybe everyone had been expecting 6, maybe it had been 4. I mean, it's kind of around about that number, but the business structurally is in good position, well-placed to grow into the future. Perhaps, you know, strengthened its competitive position against other competitors. That's really what you're looking for. Whether or not it hit or missed guidance by a few percentage points is irrelevant in my mind.
Kill me now. Stop it. Stop it.
Well, you better
it.
Brace yourself, mate, because it ain't going to change anytime soon. And we will be, actually, we'll be bringing you a bunch of these results in August when they come up. So we'll certainly talk you a lot more on
that. I will do my level best never ever to mention expectations on this podcast. There's one for you, Andrew.
I'll hold you to it.
Please do.
Look, thank you everyone for listening. We always appreciate it. Don't forget, you can subscribe to Triple M Motley Fool Money through iTunes or your favorite Android podcast app.
And of course, you can go to fool.com.au/triple M. That's fool.com.au/triple M. Leave us your email address and we'll send you a free newsletter.
Nice one. Until next week, fool on.
Fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/triple M. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.